Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Coast Guard Commandant Admiral Thad Allen. Also joining us in our conversation is Dave Abel, Director of IBM's Homeland Security Services. Admiral, how has the integration into DHS impacted the Coast Guard, and what have been some of the critical macro issues related to this integration, as well as the benefits?
Well, I think our integration into the department has been a great thing for the Coast Guard. We've had a hard time over the years finding a home because we're so diverse and multi-mission. You don't find a perfect fit in any particular department. In 1967, we were moved from Treasury, our original home, and put in the Department of Transportation when it was formed, and then in 2003 moved from Transportation to Homeland Security. I think the integration is going along very nicely. We feel like we're a contributing member in the department. We think we add stability and maturity because we were basically transferred over without any impact on our mission set or our resources. And I think we bring a lot of stability to the department. I think that we're working very, very well with our component partners in the department. We always had relationships with Customs and FEMA, but those are stronger than they ever were before. And I tell a lot of folks, I think that FEMA is better off because they're in a department with the Coast Guard, and I think the Coast Guard's better off because we're in a department with FEMA.
Admiral, we talked earlier about the deep culture and the leadership within the Coast Guard. How has this leadership style influenced the broader DHS?
Well, I think in a lot of ways the example we set through our delegation of authority and putting responsibility at the lowest levels in the organization is something that I think everybody would strive to do, and hopefully we're an example in the department to do that. One of the things that allowed us to be successful during the Hurricane Katrina response is that we expect that our operational commanders will exercise what we call on-scene initiative. And when we were cut off from higher echelons and communications weren't working down there, everybody knew how to do their job and they did the right thing and they did what was expected of them. And I think in the long run, I think that's what the American public and the Secretary would like to see out of this department.
Great. The Coast Guard has developed its maritime security strategy. Can you tell our listeners about this strategy and how does it directly support the National Strategy for Maritime Security, NSMS, and the Maritime Transportation Security Act of 2002?
One of the things that we've been working very, very hard on in the Coast Guard since the attacks in 9/11 is what this means in the maritime environment. And we were very, very pleased last year when the President issued the National Strategy for Maritime Security that lays out an overall umbrella concept on how they intend to look at maritime security issues. We've never had an overarching umbrella document like that before, and we were very pleased with it. There are several supporting plans that are required under the strategy that directly either impact the Coast Guard or we are responsible for executing. The first one is maritime domain awareness, and that's creating a system by which you're able to sense what's going on offshore and create the ability to act so you can defeat a threat as far offshore as you can before it gets close to the coast. But to do that, you need to have information about what's operating out there, and you have to be able to know which vessels are legitimate and which ones aren't. So maritime domain awareness is a very big part of that national strategy for maritime security. The other one is maritime operational threat response, and that's how you actually put forces together and go out and deal with the threat that's out there. And then global maritime intelligence integration, which is taking all the different pieces of information and putting them together into what we would call a common intelligence picture so you know why you're acting and you have a good intelligence on which to base your operations. And finally, there's a requirement for a maritime recovery plan. We hope we never have an incident in our ports, and we're going to try and prevent them, and then we're going to try and respond as best we can if there is an event. But the reality is if there's an event in a port, how you restart the waterway, how you deal with the impact on commerce is going to be very, very important, and there's a requirement for us to develop a plan for that also.
So I'd like to go from the very strategic topics that we just talked about in maritime security to one very tactical one that I think is at the forefront of the issues that you face. The Coast Guard must combat the potential threat of watercraft coming close to U.S. ports with IEDs, improvised explosive devices. How is the Coast Guard tackling this issue?
Well, we're tackling it as part of a broader strategy on how to deal with maritime security regimes for the country. There's been a lot of focus on container threats, and container threats are important. I believe in the long run there is a technological solution to threats posed by containers, either through tracking containers or non-intrusive inspection technologies, and all those are being worked right now. And I think you're going to see within a few years a fairly robust program that will address container security issues. When you look at port security or maritime security, though, you have to look at the broad spectrum of threats and vulnerabilities that are out there, and you have to kind of allocate resources based on risk, and you have to try and mitigate the threats that are liable to cause the most damage. Based on the research that we've done since 9/11, and this includes extensive surveys of our ports regarding vulnerabilities and threats that exist, we do believe that more attention needs to be paid to improvised explosive devices carried by small boats. And in general, we need to look at the small boat population out there that is not as governed or regulated as well as the larger commercial traffic. This is in regards to how they're registered, how they're operated, what they might be carrying, how we can discern legitimate from illegitimate activities out there. This is anywhere from fishing vessels to small work boats to recreational vessels, and it's something that we're starting to engage in a conversation around the country because I think we need to build a consensus about what constitutes a maritime security regime for this country that goes beyond containers and looks at a full spectrum of threats that we might encounter in our ports.
Well, let's shift gears from threats against assets to the assets themselves. The Coast Guard has embarked on a comprehensive recapitalization of its critical asset platforms through the Integrated Deepwater Systems Program. Can you elaborate a little bit on the Deepwater program?
I can. A few years ago, actually, when I was a commander, I was part of a program that extended the service life of our large cutters, and we engaged in a conversation way back then that we did not have a good plan for when those ships ended their service life about what was going to replace them. As a result of those conversations, we decided that it would be good to take a look at our mission requirements in the offshore operating environment, and rather than going for a one-for-one replacement of these ship hulls, to take a look at acquiring a system of cutters, aircraft, and sensors that were networked together and focus on the entire performance of the system as opposed to a single platform. We thought if we did that, we'd have more capable platforms, we'd have a more capable system, and we would be a much more intelligent acquisition of our capital plant. That ultimately evolved into our deep water system. We awarded the contract in 2002. We're into our fourth year of that contract. We recently launched our first major cutter, the National Security Cutter, associated with that acquisition. We recently have flown our first aircraft associated with that system. And what we're trying to do is build this architecture of platforms that are all networked together and at the same time take the legacy platforms we're operating, the old cutters and the old aircraft, and backfit them with command and control systems that will allow them to integrate into the new stuff and then slowly phase the old stuff out as we build the new platforms.
With the contract having been awarded in 2002, much of the requirements for Deepwater were developed prior to September 11, 2001. Has there been any impact from the post-September 11th world to the requirements in Deepwater?
There was, and we were in quite a quandary. After the attacks of 9/11, we were faced with two choices. One was to withdraw the request for proposals and start the acquisition over, or to go ahead and award the contract and then go back and look at our system performance specification and go back and adjust the requirements for the platforms. A good example would be we had no capability in our cutters to survive a chemical, a biological, or nuclear attack. Well, we know now, faced with the current threat environment, if you're going to operate in and around a port, we may need a vessel that can go into a non-compliant or non-permissive environment and be able to operate in those environments. So we went back and we changed the requirements for the National Security Cutter, for instance, to be able to include survivability against these threats. When you do that, that changes the requirements. They get rippled through, and there's some cost issues associated with that, and we're working through those now. But we generally have had those post-9/11 requirements validated through the joint requirements process at the department. We've briefed up on at OMB and on the Hill, and everybody generally understands that. We've rebaselined the program, and now our focus needs to be on mission execution.
Let's move from assets to talk a bit about the people within the Coast Guard. In order to perform multiple missions, Coast Guard has developed specialized units that can be deployed on short notice. Can you elaborate on the plans to reorganize these units under a single command structure called the Deployable Operations Group?
Yeah, I'd like to do that. It's a very important issue to me personally because I am vested in it, if you will. Over the years, the Coast Guard has developed what I would call specialized deployable forces, but they've been developed within programs for specific program goals and employed within a narrow stovepipe as far as operations go. For instance, we have oil and hazmat strike teams, and they're some of the best in the world. They can do level A entry. They participated in the anthrax attacks in the Capitol building. They have been employed traditionally only for oil and hazmat spills. We also have port security units, which are reserve units that we have deployed to the Persian Gulf and other places that secure the ports of embarkation and debarkation to actually move military equipment in and out. Since 9/11, we've also been authorized to build maritime safety and security teams, which are deployable into ports to provide on-water boat teams and then law enforcement tactical teams to lock down ports. And they include dive capability, canine capability, and remote-operated vehicles for searching underwater hulls. All of those operated independently within different chains of command and for different mission requirements. My intent is to bring them all together under a single command, not to move them, but to create them a trade of command structure by which we can optimize their employment and be able to what I would call adaptive force package. So if you have a particular event like a Katrina taking down New Orleans or a massive oil spill locking up a port or an earthquake, let's say in San Francisco, you could take the elements you need from each one of those deployable teams, put them together and deploy them through Coast Guard aircraft and get the right force package on the ground and be able to do that within 4 to 8 hours, the flyaway package.
Admiral, earlier you used the term aquatic holding company. And we understand that many of the Coast Guard's shore facilities date back to the 1915s. What are your plans to evolve and transform the shore-based forces in order to meet the new demands facing your agency in this post-9/11 threat environment?
Well, there are two issues there. One are the shore-based forces themselves, and the second one are the facilities they occupy. We have reorganized the shore-based forces into sector commands, and that was the right thing to do. And now we have shore-based commands that are capable of all-hazard response with a single commanding officer. Before, we used to have multiple commanding officers in and around our ports based on their mission assignment. We have done away with that. We've consolidated the command structure. The challenge we have before us is we have very, very old shore facilities. We have search and rescue stations that date back to the some of them go clear back to the 19th century, and we have not done a good job keeping up with the recapitalization of what we would call our shore plant or the actual physical facilities that our shore operators operate in. There are three significant challenges that I don't think we have spent enough time assessing, estimating the impact of, and then moving forward in the budget process that I have to deal with as Commandant. One of them is the condition of our shore facilities. The second one is the condition of our polar icebreakers. And the third one is where are we going to go with our ASA navigation mission, and especially in a post-9/11 environment where we could be expected to try and reestablish ASA navigation in a port as we had to do following Katrina.
Great. What are some of the United States Coast Guard's key organizational priorities? We will ask Coast Guard Commandant Admiral Thad Allen to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.